Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, Friday afternoon, January 10th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. A national pizza and entertainment chain is making a comeback. We'll talk about that in our next segment. But right now, job growth surged last month as the unemployment rate fell. Let's check on the impact on markets and the implications for Fed rate policy. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Paul Christopher, head of global investment strategy at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis. Paul, thank you for joining us today. And let's pick up this conversation from 10:20 this morning. We broke down the jobs report for December, 256,000 new jobs, unemployment rate at 4.1%, moderate wage growth. But this sent the markets into a tizzy. And what about this report is spooking investors today?
Well, Rob, hi, good to be back with you. So in this particular report, it was first the large number, 256,000, where 160,000 had been the expectation. So far above expectations for job growth, wage growth still looking pretty solid. And then if you go down and dig a little bit deeper into the numbers, you see that most of the gains are on the services side. And for those on Wall Street who are watching, the services portion of inflation has been what's really been driving inflation. So you figure, if we're adding a lot of service sector jobs, and that's where the inflation's come from, well, how is that happening? It goes from jobs to wages to then prices of services and then inflation. And so the thinking is, well, the Fed's not going to be able to cut rates much more if there's going to be higher inflation in 2025 than the markets have been thinking coming into the year. So that's what's giving Wall Street a little bit of indigestion today and causing investors to rethink their thoughts, their expectations for inflation and interest rates.
When the Fed kicked off the rate cutting cycle in September with that 50%, that half a percentage point rate cut, it was kind of like taking two pills at the start of a Z-pack to really get the antibiotics moving. There was some concern in September about deterioration in the labor market. So if you're the Fed and you're now fighting the war on two fronts, you got to fight inflation, but you also got to make sure the job market remains robust. Can you look at it now in January and say we did our job?
Well, yes, they have managed so far very well. Inflation has come down quite a bit, obviously, from where it was in 2022. And at the same time, the labor market is normalizing, I would say, coming closer to long-term trends, but still really pretty strong, in especially in those services jobs. And so the Fed has to say to themselves, well, gee, if the labor market's going to stay strong and inflation, you know, is something of a question mark here, then maybe we had better pause. And so it looks like fewer rate cuts in 2025 than markets had expected coming into the year. And that typically does make equity investors have to rethink their expectations and their outlook.
Now, the yield on the 10-year Treasury has been just went zooming up and has stayed there since September, more or less. Is the federal funds rate, though, is that still considered to be restrictive?
Well, that's a good question. That depends on where sort of that what we call the natural rate or the neutral rate is. The neutral rate is that rate of interest that doesn't cause inflation and doesn't bring on unemployment either. And no one really knows where that is. It's a sort of an academic construct. And so if you look at the Fed funds today, and the neutral rate is probably somewhere below it. But no one really knows exactly where that is. Investors instead are focusing, and we think investors should focus here on the bond market, where the yields have been rising again. Some of that is because of the strength that the economy has shown coming out of 2024 and into 2025. And now some of it is expectations maybe starting to perk up for future inflation. So you get those one-two punches coming in, and that's going to raise bond yields.
Paul Christopher, head of global investment strategy at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up, Chuck E. Cheese looks to make a triumphant return.
The only program dedicated to currency events. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
The entertainment restaurant chain Chuck E. Cheese is looking to make a bold comeback by adding new features, a fresh pizza recipe, and a subscription program. We're joined by R.J. Hodevy, head of analytical research at Palo Alto-based foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI. RJ, thank you for joining us today, and tell us more about the glow-up involving one Charles Entertainment Cheese. And yes, the E does stand for entertainment.
Yeah, thanks, Rob. You're exactly right. It's yet another one of the brands that we know and love from the 70s, 80s, and 90s, trying to make a comeback. So Chuck E. Cheese has really remodeled a lot of their locations, really trying to modernize the brand. Sadly, that means a lot of the animatronic band have been removed from locations, but instead have been upgraded with more modern games and entertainment, usually a digital aspect to it. Paper tickets are a thing of the past, starting to see more app usage or digital app usage within the restaurant itself. And to your point, I think they've upgraded the menu too. So it'll be interesting to see because this intersects nicely with two of the trends we've seen with our data the last year. One is the return of nostalgic brands, and the other is people need a place to stay, to entertain their kids. It's something that we're starting to see more and more of in other success stories in this category.
CEC Entertainment, the parent company of Chuck E. Cheese, filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection in 2020. So this marks the end of the bankruptcy process for Chuck E. Cheese. And you are right, because my daughter had a birthday party at the local Chuck E. Cheese about a year ago, and it was my first time stepping into one since the Showbiz Pizza days. And I was expecting the animatronic band. I wanted to see Billy Bob again, the big bear, RJ. And it was all gone. All that stuff was gone. The only vestige of the old school Chuck E. Cheese Showbiz Pizza experience was skee-ball. But the kids had a great time. And I'm guessing from a dollars and cents perspective, that's what makes the most sense.
Yeah, and from a visitation standpoint as well, what we're seeing is that the new locations have improved the visitation trends of the location. People are staying longer, and generally a longer visit is going to translate into higher revenue. So I think it's exactly right. And from an investment standpoint, I think this is a smart move. I think this is a better way to get return on your investment dollars for these locations. It'll be interesting to see, too, because I think with some of the partnerships they're entering into, whether it be Marvel or other things like that, there's some opportunities to take the brand almost outside the restaurant at this point, too. And I think that's going to be the interesting, interesting thing to watch for this brand in the years to come. Is, maybe it's not just Chuck E. Cheese locations; it's other things that you'll see with the brand to really help awareness and hopefully better return on investment.
Now, obviously, in your line of work, Chuck E. Cheese is probably considered a quick service restaurant, or it's evaluated against its restaurant peers. But as a dad of school age kids, it's an event venue. When kids are invited to a birthday party, it's the trampoline park. It's the skating rink. It's some place where you can play around for 2 hours. They provide pizza. They provide pop. They do the cleanup, and then you're out the door. And is that including trampolines into the Chuck E. Cheese experience? Is that Chuck E. Cheese acknowledging that our competition is not other pizza places, it's other birthday party venues?
I think it's and much more than that, too. I think it is acknowledging that their competition is much more than just pizza locations. I think it is saying we know there's a lot of other options out there for kids' entertainment, trampoline parks, there's escape rooms. There's a lot of things out there that really have started to pop up and are starting to grow. We've worked with a lot of these brands, and it's very interesting, and I think this is a way for them to better compete. People are willing to spend for these type of events, and if they can keep the experience consistent, what kids are looking for in this day and age. And I think they've done that. I think it's really interesting to look at. Like I said, our visitation data seems to support that this was a smart move by the company. So it is competitive. We're seeing a lot of other brands and alternative options, but I think this makes them a very viable competitor in the future.
Now, at the same time, though, RJ, I don't want to pine for a past that may never have existed, but kids today really need to learn the frustration of getting 70 physical tickets from playing skee ball and then going over to the redemption desk and finding out that 70 tickets, it's good enough for a plastic kazoo. And you don't get that same level of frustration from an app.
Sadly, you don't. And I fear that's a frustration that our children are never going to learn.
RJ Hadavi, head of analytical research at the Palo Alto-based foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI. Thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. Coming up next, tracking down a lost 401k retirement account. We'll talk about that next.
It's because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Millions of Americans have lost or forgotten about 401k accounts. Joining us with some advice on how to locate one is Bill Ulivieri, owner of Senecal Capital Management in Glenview, the website senecalcapital.com. Bill, thank you for joining us today. And there is over $1.5 trillion in 29 million lost 401k accounts. So we're talking serious money here.
We're talking big, big money, Rob. I mean, there's like $1.65 trillion sitting in lost or forgotten 401ks, roughly 29 million accounts. That means that the average account balance is $56,890, which is like double what your average school loan is that a lot of people have. So it's really interesting that at a time in society where we have so much fear, so much uncertainty, not only about retirement and higher inflation and the cost of living, but what's going to happen with Social Security benefits as we go forward. So this type of thing is really interesting, and it's, I think, a great benefit when the government can centralize all these 401k database for citizens.
Now, there are a number of ways in which you can track them down, starting with this new retirement lost and found database. Where do you find it and how do you use it?
Well, I'm looking at the website right now. And I'm on the U.S. Department of Labor website. So if you go to lostandfound.dol.gov, and the Employee Benefit Security and the Department of Labor are kind of working together to enact something from the SECURE Act in 2022. And this database just went online in December of 2024. So there's a few places that you can go to track it down, but typically, it's this new database you can go to and put in your Social Security number. You can track down perhaps your own 401k statements that you might be receiving as an email, or the ones that you shred the envelope without even opening when they come into the front door mail. You know, you can contact your former employers. You can check your past W-2 tax forms. And there's a few other databases and directories that you can check. But it is something I think people should put on their bucket list for 2025, because it might, you know, $56,000 seems like a lot of money, but in 2009, when the gig economy really took off, it could have been like a $12,000 to $15,000 back then. So you would have easily ignored it, and now it's hopefully been in a target-dated fund rather than just sitting in money market cash. So I think it's an exciting thing for people. And you know, consider it a lottery ticket that you've already won. You just have to go back and try to find it.
Now, Bill, this is the equivalent of like landing on free parking in Monopoly. And if you realize you're sitting on $56,000 you didn't know about, let's just, you know, hypothetically speaking, do you roll that over into your current retirement account? Or do you take the tax hit and use that to pay off other expenses you may have?
I think personally it depends on each person's situation, but if it was me, I mean, why not just let the magic of compound interest work in your favor? I personally would roll it over, and because, listen, with interest, with short-term rates at 4.5%, you have even short-term corporate bond funds are paying 6.86%. The market did fabulous in 2024, up 23%. So, you know, I would encourage people to roll it over and get that money working as hard as you can, because what isn't being measured is not going to perform, right? If you're not watching it, you're ignoring it, and that's not a good thing either, because there's too much at risk, especially during retirement.
Bill Ulivieri, owner of Senecal Capital Management in Glenview. Find him online, Senecal with a C, capital.com. Thank you for joining us today. Still ahead on Entrepreneur Friday, growing a business in the ultra-competitive chicken, sandwich, and tenders space.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. President-elect Trump will be the first person convicted of a felony to serve in the nation's highest office. The effort to fight wildfires in California takes a hit from an illegal aircraft. It's Entrepreneur Friday, carving out a bigger space in the chicken sandwich and tender field. The government jobs report for December is out. We'll focus on the local employment situation. WBBM Business, the markets are lower. The Dow is down 513 points. The NASDAQ is down 236. The S&P 500 is down 68. We have 28 degrees right now in Chicago with light snow. It's 12:31, topping our news at the half hour. President-elect Trump is officially a convicted felon. He appeared virtually for his sentencing in a New York City courtroom this morning. More from CBS News political reporter Katrina Kaufman.
It was remarkable to hear Trump speak on his his own behalf, but in such a different way than you would normally hear a defendant speak at his own criminal trial. Usually that's to express remorse, to try to explain their actions. Trump sat there and really just defended himself, continued to proclaim his innocence and the injustice of this trial.
The unconditional discharge by the judge recognizes that a crime was committed but does not impose a penalty. A firefighting plane in Los Angeles has been taken out of service after a mid-air mishap. The details from CBS's Chris Van Cleve.
It was up flying over the Palisades fire Thursday when it was struck by a drone. The drone apparently put a hole in one of the wings of this airplane. The two people on board, the pilot and the spotter, were able to get the plane down safely. It landed. They are okay. But that plane is now grounded because of this drone incident. That takes a critical firefighting tool off the table.
At least 10 people have been killed and thousands of homes, businesses, and other structures have been destroyed by the wildfires. It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are trading sharply lower today. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services. Find him online at horizoninvestment.com. Chuck, thank you for joining us today. Now, even though the markets, the three major indices are all down over 1%, they have recovered somewhat from earlier in the session. The Dow is down 524 points right now, Chuck, and at one point this morning, it was down over 700. So a little bit of recovery as we approach the noon hour.
It is. It'll be curious to see if that recovery continues in the second half of the day today. The market is trying to weigh these things, Rob. On the one hand, you had a jobs report that was, much better than expected, and more jobs should mean, a stronger economy and better corporate profits, which is a good thing. On the other hand, the job report kind of puts the kibosh on at least in the short run any further Fed cuts, and also kind of fans the flames for inflation. So you have these kind of tug of war going on between, corporate profits, which should benefit from a better jobs market, a stronger economy, versus, higher interest rates, which tend to pull money away from equities and into fixed income. So I think that's what the market's dealing with today, and that's probably what the market's going to be dealing with here, at least over the next few weeks here, until we get into corporate earnings season.
At the same time, though, and this is just taking a look under the hood of the December jobs report, it wasn't exactly apocalyptic when it came to fighting inflation. I mean, maybe it reduces the odds of a Fed rate cut later this year or more of them in 2025. But the wage numbers weren't exactly inflationary. And it seems like when it comes to the CPI and the PPI and other inflation reports, base effects are going to give you some pretty nice looking numbers going forward.
Well, you make a great point about the wages. I mean, to me, the worst part about inflation, or the big key, is what's going on in terms of wage inflation. And yeah, that was fairly muted in this report. It certainly wasn't worse than what was expected, and probably was a little bit better than was expected. So, again, that's one of the factors that the market's trying to weigh here, is the import between, potential for higher interest rates versus, better corporate profits and maybe inflation that may or may not be, rekindling here. Again, it's tough. I think it's going to be tough for the Fed to get down to that 2% level that they're searching for here in the near term. But I think as long as inflation can kind of be contained around its current level, I'm not so sure this is the worst report, and the market, I think, can come back from this for sure.
And also, I mean, we had a huge run in November, and it kind of ran out of gas as we approached the end of the year. And already we're seeing some selling to start 2025. But was this really a sign that maybe the markets were overbought in November and that investors are just looking for any reason to bail out?
Well, I think what we're seeing here, at least our work, is the primary market trend, according to the Dow theory, which we use, is still very much bullish. What we're seeing here has all the characteristics of a pullback within a bull market. I mean, these pullbacks tend to be violent. They tend to be scary, which is what they're intended to do, to take the froth out of the market. But the parameters of this decline have fit very neatly into what you would expect in a bull market correction. So, you know, we from our standpoint, this is still very much a bull market, and this pullback here is not out of the ordinary by any means. And, you know, if investors wanted to do some nibbling in here on this pullback, we think that's appropriate.
Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services in Hammond, Indiana. Find him online, horizoninvestment.com. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Entrepreneur Friday, a conversation with a Chicago businessman that's bound to make you hungry.
Your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Entrepreneur Friday, and it's lunch hour, so why not talk to a guy who runs a lunch spot, or a dinner spot, or a snack spot? Let's meet the man behind local fried chicken sandwich chain Fry the Coop, now with 9 locations, over 200 employees. We welcome in Joe Fontana, founder and owner of Fry the Coop in Chicago, numerous locations. Joe, thank you for joining us today. Now, you opened the first Fry the Coop location in Southwest Suburban Oak Lawn back in 2017. And what were some of the things that you learned about establishing that first location?
Oh, wow. Well, you got to take care of your community, and you got to just treat every customer with like the most love, most care. One time, I think it's so important to say hello and goodbye to customers. One time I missed a customer leaving. I jumped over the counter, ran out into the parking lot, knocked on this guy's window in his car, and I scared him. He looked at me like, hey, what's going on? I go, hey, I just wanted to say thank you for coming in. We really appreciate your business. We got a 5-star review later on that day, and it said, the customer service is so good at Fry the Coop, it's borderline creepy. and I think that's what he was talking about.
Well, that's very good that you believe in that human connection. And what was it also about Oak Lawn that for that first initial location?
Oh, well, you know, we go after second-generation restaurants, and that's been kind of our theme. And we just got really lucky. This was a space that a restaurant had opened up. They remodeled it, and they failed within 8 months. And so we kind of snuck in on a newly remodeled restaurant. And I had to paint the place. And get this, it only cost us $62,000 to open up our first store. So that was kind of the huge advantage. And also, the Southsiders love to eat food. So that's another big bonus down there.
Yeah, I was going to say, I grew up on the southwest side of Chicago, so I know the geography of that first Fry the Coop location. You're right across the street from the Metro station. You're next to the
right.
Children's Museum. So a lot of people, I'm sure, can conjure up an excuse to darken your door, and then maybe you can chase them down personally. who knows? So you go from opening this one establishment in Oak Lawn, and then you scale up. At what point do you say to yourself, this makes sense to scale up economically? And then how do you do that? How do you scout the location? And how do you repeat these processes 1, 2, 3, up to 9 times?
Yeah, and it's a great question, because when I wrote the business plan for Fry the Coop, I knew it was a scalable venture. So that was like a really appealing part, is like, I knew, I said, if you could put this in any town, I think it'll be a hit. And so far, I've proved it to be right. But I think, you know, we do like the envelope system, or we did at least in the beginning, where, you know, you take your cash and you put, you know, the sum away for rent, and you put some away for the electric bill. So I created bank accounts to create this little envelope system that grandmas used to do back in the day. And I just kept always putting cash to the side. I would allocate, you know, if I could put a couple $100, $1,000, $3,000 aside every week. And that gave me the cash flow to open up our second store, our third store, and we just kept parlaying that, you know. And so we always have cash in the bank, which is great, and then it helps us keep opening. And now I've learned a lot opening up 9 locations. We're about to open up our 10th pretty soon. We go for busy streets. Traffic counts are huge, because if you have a great restaurant, you could get people in the door for that first initial year. They want to try the new spot. But convenience really is king. So, like, we're in Elmhurst on North Avenue and 83, and that's, you know, a really busy street on Elmhurst. Also, the downtown Elmhurst is really busy, too. But if I had to choose between being in the little downtown area of Elmhurst or on the busy North Avenue, I'm choosing the North Avenues of the world any day of the week.
It's Entrepreneur Friday. We're talking to Joe Fontana, founder and owner of Fry the Coop in Chicago, 9 locations across the city. Now, when you opened in 2017, the fried chicken wars were underway. The chicken sandwich wars were underway. Chick-fil-A had moved into the Chicago market. McDonald's responded in kind with their own chicken sandwich offerings. And ironically, these two behemoths of quick service food, when they were advertising their chicken sandwiches, that actually ended up benefiting you.
Oh, it was a blessing in disguise. The chicken sandwich wars kicked off. We were lucky to have 4 locations rocking at the time. And I mean, I don't know if you remember, but every billboard on 294 was a chicken sandwich. And
yeah, it was Brian Urlacher's head in chicken sandwiches.
Yeah, yeah, grow some hair, and 100%. So it was great. McDonald's of the world, Popeye's, Chick-fil-A's, they were all, you know, promoting and advertising, I felt, for us. And we saw a 20% increase in business, like, almost overnight. And that actually lasted for about 18 months.
And then what was it about the last decade? Because you opened in 2017, and then Chick-fil-A came into the Chicago market, Cane's came into the Chicago market, but there were so many other smaller establishments around the city and the suburbs that jumped into the fried chicken space. I'm not going to name them, but I could just think of 6 or 7 fried chicken places or southern cooking restaurants or food trucks that established brick-and-mortar locations that all sprung up around the city, and they all seem to be doing very well a decade later. So what is it about fried chicken that makes it attractive, not only from a customer standpoint, but also for you as a money-making enterprise?
What I've seen is, you know, a lot of the trends start on the West Coast. California, you can almost watch them kind of happen a year or two before they make their way to Chicago. But I really think there's also a change going on. You know, cheeseburgers are still king. The cheeseburger is everywhere. But I feel like when you eat a cheeseburger, you kind of get a little bogged down for lunch or dinner, you know? And when you eat a chicken sandwich or white meat chicken, I feel like it's a little less heavy eating. And I also feel like it's a little better for you, too. You're eating white meat versus, like, red meat. So I feel like there is a little change happening. You're starting to see the chicken segment grow all over the country, and it's catching up to burgers. Like I said, burgers are still king in the fast food, fast casual space, but chicken is coming.
Joe Fontana, founder and owner of Fry the Coop in Chicago, 9 locations, a 10th on the way, and some big expansion plans as well. Still to come, a check of local jobs in light of the government employment report for December. It's
lunch money for all generations. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
We talked about the big government jobs report earlier in the show, but how are things shaping up locally? Joining us now to discuss is Michelle Reisdorf, Chicago jobs expert with the Robert Half Company in Chicago. Michelle, thank you for joining us today. And it's kind of a mixed picture, I think, on the jobs front if you are looking for a job right now. Clearly, the services sector is adding jobs based on that December jobs report. But if you want to make a career change, right now, Michelle, it's a different story, perhaps.
Well, you know, that all depends based on, you know, the skills that you're able to put forth. You know, overall career what we're seeing this first week back in the market is definitely strong hiring. Clients reaching out right away, ready to hire into the new year. A lot of them looking to add employees. And so it's really about how you position yourself based on the skill set that you have and the jobs that are out there and open.
Yeah, I said career change. I should say job change. Career change may be a little more complicated, but if you want to move into a new role that has a greater title or greater responsibilities or pays more money or is more intellectually stimulating, it seems like the opportunities do exist.
Absolutely. And you've got to come out strong out of the gate. You can't assume that you have time to kind of ease into the year and start your search. as I said, you know, we heard from a lot of clients this week looking to hire, and you want to make sure that you're first and foremost in front of them as companies really start to come back into 2025.
Now, one thing I have noticed just by perusing LinkedIn is that a lot of businesses and a lot of companies, they have their, as part of their LinkedIn posting process, the stuff they put up just to market themselves, they have their prediction pieces about trends in 2025, and every single one involves AI. And the application of AI at the corporate level, what does this mean for you as a job seeker? Does this mean that your potential, your career field could be eliminated or impacted by AI, or it's something that you need to be well versed in if you are interviewing for a new job?
Yes. So not eliminated, but definitely impacted. And you are right on, Rob, when you say you need to be aware and making updates to your skill set, your resume, et cetera, where AI is concerned. I know you and I have talked several times over the last year about, you know, upskilling your talent, signing up for classes, going to boot camps, asking your company, you know, what training they're offering or how they intend to use AI so that you can get in front of it and learn about it and be open to using it. Because as we've said many times, people will not lose jobs to AI. They will lose jobs to people that have knowledge and working usage of AI.
And then before you sign up for maybe a more formalized training process, I mean, why not just start playing around with various applications yourself?
Absolutely. Great point. Most of us have gone out there and dabbled a little bit in ChatGPT, and, you know, the newest set of phones all have some sort of AI technology built in. So, yes, you just can't be afraid to use. You can't hurt anything or break anything. You've got to learn it. And then that gives you the confidence to go out and maybe sign up for a course or ask for additional training.
Michelle Reisdorf, Chicago jobs expert with the Robert Half Company in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. If you missed any part of today's show, just go to our stream and skip back to the time you want. There's a pause and rewind function, works both online and with the Odyssey app.